Welcome to A Drummer's Guide 2, the podcast all about things it takes to be a successful musician, professional musician, aside from actually playing your instrument. So today I want to talk about something that I became very obsessed with in my sort of mid-teens to mid-20s. Arguably, I still am to a degree, but not to the same degree, if that makes sense. And that was this idea of becoming obsessed with what it takes to become a successful musician. And I've been the kind of person that I've always been very interested in like patterns, finding trends between different people. And like I say, in my mid-teens to my mid-20s, that became an obsession with finding the common threads between successful musicians, basically. And I just wanted to share with you my findings that, you know, I personally found, and let's just caveat this, by successful musicians, what I mean is someone that was doing it for their living, and that was through playing live, that was through doing recording sessions, like being a session musician as their full-time job. So that might look like something different to you, maybe to you, you know, being a TikTok or a YouTube sort of drummer that does covers and stuff, that might be success to you, and that's totally fine, like each to their own. And so this kind of, these principles work in whatever success looks like to you, but I just thought that I'd share with you my journey, basically. So I am obsessed with when I sort of like I say, when I think about sort of finding patterns, I'm like, right, okay, I need lots of data. I think I definitely have like a naturally, I wouldn't say a scientific mind, because I think that that's that feels like too much of a clever description of me. I am not clever. I'm intrigued and I'm obsessive, and I have a lot of information about the very small amount of subject matter. But my thing was, when I was around that age, was right, I'm just gonna research and find out as much as I can about the musicians, the drummers, the kinds of people that are doing what I want to do, that are successful in their industry, and just look at what it was to me was more about the sort of day-to-day habits, like their daily routines. Again, something I'm always really fixated on. I don't know why, but I have this belief that it's the kind of those daily things that you do are the things that are going to make the biggest difference, like the little movements, the little things. And in my experience, that's actually been truthful, and you know, I had a hunch, and I don't know, my experience is that that's true. It's not about the big moves that happen. They rarely lead to anything sustainable, but what does is your day-to-day action. So anyway, my way of researching this was becoming completely engulfed in, starting out, it was sort of like reading articles in places like Rhythm Magazine, Drummer Magazine, later on Modern Drummer, obviously, and just kind of like just sifting through articles and just going, right, so what is this person, so what's Steve Gadd, what's his, like, what does his life look like? Not, you know, what is he practicing, what is he saying about rudiments, what is he saying about XYZ? It's like, no, what are, what's all the other stuff that he does? I remember reading articles of Cindy Blackman and sort of like really noticing what she was up to, like day to day, what she had done and all that sort of stuff. And again, it wasn't about, look at this amazing artist I'm playing for. It's like the minutiae of like, how do they approach this? This is really interesting. And I got hold of a few biographies as well. So Levon Helm, This Wheel's on Fire was one of them, which biographies are great because they really do give you insight into the background of a musician. I think, what was the other one? There was, I want to say it was Earl Palmer. I'm not 100% about that. But anyway, it was certainly a book that, again, it kind of gave me information of like, what does your day-to-day look like? What I also did was I was going out to drum clinics and masterclasses. I was talking to drummers and just basically chewing their ear off, just going like, how are you doing this? Like, what should I do? What should I be doing? And also other musicians as well. I would be emailing people, meeting up with people for coffee, and just kind of asking them, like, what is it that you are up to? And like I say, this was kind of like a sliding scale of success, if you like, in my eyes. And again, this is all completely subjective to, and it should be to you too. Like, everyone has different ideas of what success is. But for me, what it meant was being on tour, playing drums for a living, recording sessions, like that is what success looked like to me. So I was just like going, I was basically seeking out these people, these poor people that I just was chatting to. And then I would also like watch documentaries about sort of wider scopes of, you know, bands or musicians or whatever. And then what was I doing? I was listening to podcasts, early days of podcasts. Shout out to the I'd Hit That podcast. I learned so much from that podcast, listening to it to and from gigs and just like obsessing over, again, like he's so brilliant at asking questions that really get to the heart of what being a drummer means and how they got there. It was so insightful. So really brilliant resource if you haven't heard that podcast. That's one of the original sort of drumming podcasts. It's just ace, like always has been. So yeah, I just became completely obsessed. And then I sort of like went outside of just music and I would start, or I started, because I still do, I started reading biographies of other successful people in their sort of sphere. And this wasn't even in the music sphere. So one that really stood out to me and really made an impact was a book about John Wooden. I can't remember if it was an autobiography or not, but basically he is a basketball coach. Now I know nothing about basketball, zero. Absolutely zero, apart from like a couple of the players like Kobe Bryant, but that was because I used to watch him on TV when I was a kid, when he was like, I think it was on The Fresh Prince, I think he was on there, and I just thought, oh, he's really nice, he seems really cool. And yeah, so I know nothing, but as far as I can remember, he's kind of like, I remember he's very successful, but I think it was college basketball that he was really successful at. But he kind of explained what that entailed, how he trained his players and what that looked like to him. So anyway, super interesting. And that again led me to kind of expanding into more of the psychology side of peak performance and what that sort of took. And again, bringing it back to these day-to-day things that I could do. And I had some findings and I wanted to share with you what these findings were. And again, this is me being a very young, you know, there's nothing scientific about what I was doing, but there was a lot of intrigue. Yeah, like I say, this is all just my opinion and what I found. But anyway, the common thread between all of these people, bar none, was that whatever they were successful in, they were just doing it all the time. Like, all the time. So in terms of like recording sessions, I would read about, like I said, I'm sure it was R. Palmer in particular that really stood out. I'm sure it was, unless I'm misremembering. I don't have the biography anymore. But anyway, he was doing crazy amounts of recording sessions. Every day, all day, it wasn't even a thing. And of course, this was in a different time. So, you know, the music industry landscape was very different. But the point was, he was doing it all the time, day in and day out. Like, that was his life. That was his day-to-day life. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Same with Steve Gadd. Same with Cindy Blackman. Always out gigging, always out playing, every night. And I remember that. I remember her talking about carting her kit around New York City and kind of having to be really this is such a weird thing to remember, having to be really purposeful about how she got her kit from, it was either her car or a cab or whatever, into her apartment, and just like the journey at like 3 a.m, whatever. Anyway, really strange thing to remember, but there you go. John Wooden, same thing. All his players were just playing constantly, like day in, day out. And same with Levon Helm, he was playing constantly. He was always out gigging, like just doing stuff. And at the time that I was reading this, I was not out doing this all the time. I was trying, I was desperately trying, but it, you know, at the time I didn't have, you know, I was still building my career, my visibility within the industry, my skill set, most importantly, my network, all of those things. So I probably was kind of in demand as much as my network was wide. If that makes sense to you, welcome. You are officially a friend of mine. So yeah, I feel like looking back, I was probably working to within the means that I had, definitely. But it was nowhere near where I wanted to be. Like, no, not even close. So I started thinking about this idea of like, okay, so you know that phrase, and I hate this phrase so much. I hate it. Fake it till you make it. I can't even say it. I hate it so much. Fake it till you make it, it's not that I necessarily disagree with it, but I have issue with it. But that's another story for another time, because I also have a thing about people just basically being charlatans about what they're doing, and then, oh, I don't like it. Anyway, another subject for another time. But in regards to this, I just thought, well, why don't I start living my life like I'm the successful drummer that I want to be? And I started thinking about this as a concept, and it was like, right, well, if the work isn't there, or if people aren't calling, because bear in mind, at this time, I was doing a lot of free work, and it was more about getting experience, meeting new people, expanding my network, just being out there, just being out on the scene, my name getting around, all that sort of stuff. So that was more what that was about. However, within that, I still wasn't doing enough in my head. Sorry, it's a terrible thing. Can I just say, if you're saying to yourself, I'm not doing enough, please stop, because it's so unhealthy. I spent years and years and years saying that to myself and burning myself out and running myself into the ground. It's the most unhealthy thing you can ever say to yourself. Maybe not ever, but for me, really, 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 really destructive. So please, please don't say that. Like, allow yourself rest. It's really important. It's something I'm still learning. Anyway, at the time, I didn't feel I was doing enough. I was probably doing a few gigs a week, and that was either sort of covers bands, or that was original stuff. Some of it was paid a little bit, but a lot of it, like I say, was free. I was doing a few rehearsals a week as well. So, you know, I was doing stuff. I was having drum lessons every week. I was going out to gigs. I was doing stuff. But to me, it wasn't enough of the right stuff, if that makes sense. And there were still moments where I was just like, literally, I'm at home. What should I be doing? So I sat down and I just thought, right, if I were the successful musician that I want to be, what would I be doing right now? So this is how my brain works. So first of all, as a baseline, I said yes to anything that came in terms of like live music, in terms of sessions, like recording stuff, anything. I was like, yes, I will go do that. And again, slightly to my detriment sometimes I got very sick. There is a limit. I didn't find it at that time. I have now. It's all good. But if the work wasn't there and I wasn't being asked to do stuff, I would still have daily behaviours that would reflect what being successful would be. So, and this wasn't just with music, interestingly. I also made sure that I was working out, because I knew that my health would be a very big factor. It still is. I still do. It's still incredibly important. I've expanded that to making sure that I eat very well. I love food, as you know. But, you know, in that period of time, I was eating so badly. It was partly because I had no money, if I'm honest. But it was partly because, I don't know why it was, actually. Maybe I was just exhausted. That's probably what it was. That's probably exactly what it was. But aside from that, what I would do is I would start rehearsing, in inverted commas, songs of artists that I would love to be playing with, like my dream artists. So I would get together a playlist of, you know, songs like, at the time, I was really into people like John Mayer, for instance. So I would get together a set list of like John Mayer songs, and I would just rehearse them so that I knew them, and as if I was gonna go do the gig, which probably sounds pretty intense. And it was, and it's fine, because, you know, it was a really interesting sort of way to learn the skills that I would need had I have been in that situation, if that makes sense. I remember doing a whole stint with Prince songs as well. What else? Oh, there were loads of, honestly, there were periods of time where I was just like, right, and this is my obsession of artists that I'm going to rehearse for this month. So yeah, I started doing that day to day. And don't get me wrong, it was hard, and sometimes it was really demoralizing because you're kind of, it's just you in the room there, and you're not doing this for any sort of other person, you're not doing this for any sort of kudos, you're not doing it for work, you're literally just doing it with this kind of blind faith almost that this is going to pay off at some point. I need to be ready. And there's very much, that was very much an onus for me growing up. And I always remember my drum teacher, Mike Dolbear, he always used to say to me, you know, you've got to just be ready for when the opportunity comes. And that's what should drive you all the time, is that, you know, because it's hard to stay motivated. It is when there's nothing directly in front of you. And I'm the person that if I have a goal, if I have a reason to do something, I am laser focused. That is me. And that is the way that I work best, definitely. But at this time, it was like, it was this kind of very vague goal of like, I know I want to be doing this professionally, but there's not a gig that I'm working towards. So that just, I still find it very overwhelming of like, where do I point this laser focus that I have that is one of my biggest strengths, but it's such a huge weakness when there's this vast kind of landscape that I could literally point to anywhere. Again, well done if you've stayed with me with that metaphor. But anyway, so I started doing that. And like I say, it was a great way to kind of just get into this habit of just rehearsing and practicing stuff. I would even put on little performances by myself in the studio as if I was doing a gig. So yeah, that's embarrassing. Oh well, whatever. And yeah, so that was kind of like the live side of stuff. And again, the working out was very much part of that because I knew that, you know, being on the road is exhausting. I need to be fit. I need to be healthy. So that kind of fed into that, if that makes sense. Also, I was learning the set list songs whilst I was working out. Again, this was all part of, this is what my day-to-day life would look like if I were doing that. So another thing that I knew that I wanted to do was to be recording in the studio. I knew that I wanted to do that. And let's just side note, with all that rehearsing and practicing, always recording myself and listening back. Always, 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 always. So obviously the same with recording. And at the time, I didn't have access to a studio, not like this. I had a little mini tape recorder that my dad donated to me, and that's what I would record on. And it was the same for when I was doing recording sessions. So I knew that if I wanted to be doing, you know, 20 sessions a day or 10 sessions a day, whatever, like my heroes were that I had read about, I would have to have these peripheral skills of being able to do things, for instance, like learn the songs really quickly. So, and this also goes into the rehearsal for the live stuff. So that's sort of around the time I started learning how to chart really like quickly. So I knew that if I sat down and listened to a song once, I could then play it. The goal was that I could listen to it once and record it. So I just did loads of it. I just did it that so much. And again, this was all kind of mixed in together, but it kind of highlighted to me the skills that I needed around the goal, if that makes sense. And the only way that I found that out was just by doing it, doing lots of it. And again, I was recording a session for John Mayer's Continuum album, all in inverted commas. I wish, I love that album, I really, really do. So I would record to that, and I would notice my placement of notes, I would notice my touch, I would notice how in time I was keeping, obviously, how locked in I was with the other musicians. I'm not sure that quite made sense, you know what I'm saying? And again, all these peripheral skills came to the forefront just because I was just doing so much of it. I I remember as well, you know, record Al Green's Call Me album. That was another one that I was just obsessed with. And it just, the sounds on that album. And it was kind of trying to recreate that. Now, bear in mind, again, through a mini tape recorder, but it was just this kind of day-to-day thing. And it became my day-to-day life. And it was like, right, if my life is going to look like this, this is what I'm going to be doing. And I was able to give myself the space to kind of iron out all the things that inevitably would have, and in the past had, come up in those scenarios. And it gave me the space to be able to work it out in the comfort of my own head space, all that sort of stuff, without being, you know, already in the situation and ruining it, which, as I said, I did that. Zero stars, would not recommend. I've talked about it a load, so I won't go into it here. But yeah, it was just a really interesting, like, and I often do this sort of like looking back retrospectively. It's like, of course that's what I should have done. Of course that was the correct thing to do. Because when you do get called for the gig, you need to have years of foundational experience of skills. It's very difficult to get on a session, say, and you can't fake years worth of experience. You can't. You might be able to practice a beat that you might find difficult, and therefore, you know, you practice it to death and you get in the studio and you can play it. Well done. Great. That's great. But that's not the thing that is important. That beat should be well within your wheelhouse, and there should be this thickness of foundation, because you don't know what's going to happen in that session and things are going to change. And if all you have is that one beat that you're kind of teetering on the top of a mountain or whatever, I'm trying to think of a metaphor, it's kind of like being on a tightrope, I suppose, and you're sort of teetering, you can just about do it, but if anything changes, a gust of wind is going to come and just knock you right off, and then what? So you need to be feeling like you're just walking around on terra firma. This foundation is so solid. You have got, you know, you can venture around. You can, like, you can explore the terrain rather than just sticking to this tightrope. So, yeah, that's kind of the thing that afforded me. Another thing that I realized was that, you know, the level of musicians that I want to be playing with, I want to be playing with world-class musicians. That was my thing. I was like, you know, all these people that I'm listening to, I want to be playing with them. So what I also would do is, again, recording myself and listening back, playing, like, I didn't have access to world-class musicians. I didn't, you know, I was not in touch at that time with world-class musicians. So I thought, well, what's the best, next best thing? And I would, again, record myself and listen back, and I would play two records. Arguably, it's similar to the recording thing, but slightly different, because the emphasis was on locking in with those musicians, and whether it was locking in with the drummer that was on track, which makes the most sense because they also were world-class musicians, or locking in with the other musicians, I would make sure that I would record myself, listen back, and just notice how I was playing in comparison to those other musicians, and make sure that I was part of that groove, that I was bedded in with them. And don't get me wrong, I was not bedded in with them, not at first, not for a long time. And, you know, there's so much more that goes into that when you're actually in the room playing with people. But it kind of gave me, again, this foundational experience of understanding what the job entailed and what this day-to-day sort of like skill set looked like, still looks like. But the only way that I was able to do that was to recognize what other people had done. What is it they say? You're meant to stand on the shoulders of giants or something like that. And I remember reading something else about like modeling. I'm not talking like modeling on, you know, a runway. I'd be no good at that. I'm so clumsy. I fall over. My balance is not great. I am not elegant or graceful, not whilst walking, at least. Maybe on the drums a little bit ish. Meh, sometimes. But anyway, modeling, which is this idea of finding someone that is already doing what you want to do and then modeling the traits, the characteristics, all of that. This is where this all came from, basically. And yeah, so I just focused on these areas, and inevitably, and again, I don't know why this happens, how this happens, what it does, or it did for me, was that things started coming in that all of a sudden I felt ready for. The other interesting thing, I think is interesting, the other thing that I used to do, I still do, is I would do a lot of visualization as well. So, and again, this might seem a little bit too out there for you, and that's fine, but it's what I did, and let me tell you, it works for me. I would visualize playing on stage with those artists that I was recording for, rehearsing for, playing with. So I remember I would just sit on my bed and I would close my eyes and I would imagine that I was on stage playing with John Mayer whilst listening to, what was that album? Any Given Thursday, maybe? I think he did a lot. Oh no, Incubus was Live at Red Rocks. I think it was Any Given Thursday. So I would visualize being in the drum seat, playing those parts, looking at the other musicians, them turning around, being really happy with what I was doing, and just creating this scenario, which then became very normalized to a degree in my head. And again, this is something that I've carried on throughout my career, and it's a really great technique, but there are not downsides, but I certainly found disappointment with it, and that's because when I started out, this is such a strange thing, but when I started out playing drums, I thought that, you know, when you go and play gigs, it's going to be this exciting, new, you know, unknown territory, it's going to be so rah! And in reality, in my world, I have already played the set so much, I have already visualized the gigs and what's going to happen so much, I've already run through everything that could go wrong, so I know to a degree what I could do if anything goes wrong on the gig, that, and I know the gig, I feel like I know the gig and I've seen the gig inside out, that by the time I get there, it's not that it's a bit of a kind of letdown, but I already know, I'm already like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. Don't get me wrong, there's sometimes things that do happen that surprise you and you're like, wow, okay, cool. But on the whole, it's like, it's not a surprise to me ever because I've done it, and all the work, all of the excitement, all of the nervousness, all of the anxiety, all of the things that I'm worried about, all those things have already been taken care of in the solitude of my own practice room or my own head, basically, my own brain, which, I don't know, I think it's a great thing in terms of me doing my job well, definitely. And it's, I guess it's just different to what I anticipated being a professional drummer looks like, if that makes sense. I don't know whether that makes sense to you, but it's just a really interesting realization that I had. And it kind of has to be that way for me. It has to be that way because me doing a good job is 100% the only thing that I care about, like literally. So yeah, it is interesting. Like I say, interesting things do still happen. And what's fun about that is on gigs like, for instance, Tricky or on The Voice Kids, there's a lot of elements of the unknown. Like you really don't know what's going to happen. So those are fun gigs for that reason, because I do get that feeling of like excitement and just you don't know what's going to happen. And but it's still within the confines of knowing what I'm doing, if that makes sense. So it's kind of a really good in between for me, basically. So anyway, I just wanted to share my kind of research as a teenager and someone in their early 20s about what it means to be a professional musician. And I think the underlining factor in whatever you're trying to do, whatever you're trying to be successful in. And again, this is not just related to music at all. This could be in art, this could be in filmmaking, it could be in anything. Sport, and it's, you know, like I say, it's kind of the opposite of the reason that you probably got into it. And that is to get to a point where everything is just so normalized, which again is probably not the reason you got into this. Yeah, it needs to be so normalized that you're just doing it day in and day out. And don't get me wrong, I love what I do every day. But it's not like there's a calmness that comes with it. I suppose that's what I'm trying to say. There's a, again, it comes down to that foundation. I have a very solid foundation on the whole with what I do as a drummer and various other things like this podcast, for instance. And in fact, you know, with this podcast, great example, I just knew that I had to do a lot of it so that this could be normalized. You go to my earlier ones. Oh my God. I mean, they're fine. They're fine. You go to my early talking on camera things. They're fine, but they're not, you know, there's a lot, not wrong, but there's a lot to be improved upon. However, now I'm quite happy just sitting here chatting to you. I do all of these now as just one takes, one shot, just talking to you because honestly, I just feel like I'm chatting to my mate, if that makes sense. And I just want to help in any way that I can. But that has not always been the way. My early ones is a lot, what was I saying? Blah, blah. I mean, I still do that. I still go off on a tangent, but that's what I'm like in real life. So welcome. And it was the same with the studio. You know, starting out the remote recording business, I knew that I just had to do a lot of it. And I needed to, again, act like I was doing it full time. When I started, people weren't asking me to record for them. I barely even knew what I was doing. So I just had to do a lot of it. So I realized what I didn't know how to do and then normalize it and make sure that I did know. And there's always still things that come up. And if you look at any of my livefromemilydrums.com, when I used to stream a lot of the sessions, you can see stuff going wrong. You can see bugs that happen within Logic, or you can see me struggling with parts, or maybe one of the mics is acting weird or whatever. But the point is that I just kept going. I just kept doing it. I worked it out and then we moved on. And you know, things just got better and easier and normalized. Same with the voice kids. It was like the more that I did it, it just became normalized. And now it's not this incredibly overwhelming, anxiety driven, you know, scary thing. It's like, cool, I get to go see my mates. Oh yeah, and we're doing some work. So I think, although it's not sexy, I think normalizing whatever you want to do, whatever success is to you, getting it into your daily routine, just part of your life. Like, if you want it as part of your life, act like it's part of your life right now, from today. And it's funny how opportunities will then come to you, be drawn to you. I don't know whether it's some cosmic thing or whether it's just that your brain kind of switches into a different mode. I don't know. But I do know that in my experience, as soon as I start acting like the thing that I want to be, doing the relevant work, obviously, I don't just sit there twiddling my thumb, being all visualizing and just things happen and come to me. That's not how it works. But things will come to you that align with where you want to be. I just think it's an interesting idea. I think it's an interesting idea. It's something that I practice all the time still to this day. If I want to be somewhere, if I have a goal, I'm very conscious about thinking about what I want my life to look like day to day, and then and just acting like the person that I want to be. And inevitably you just end up being that person. So anyway, I think it's interesting. I hope you do too. If you're listening this far, I'm guessing that you do. My stomach is rumbling something chronic right now. I think I'm gonna have to go and have some food or something. No, just food. Food is what helps when your stomach is rumbling. Anyway, right. I shall leave you to it. I hope that you're keeping well. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to like, share and subscribe. If you'd like to go the extra mile and support this podcast, you now can over on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/EmilyDrums. And also if you want to see all the other things that I do within this strange niche of a career that I've carved out for myself, then you can go to emilydrums.com. You can book me for a session on your songs. You can book me for a one-on-one coaching session. You can learn how to run a remote recording studio, or you can just come and say hi, which is my favorite thing ever, because I love meeting the people that are listening to this, especially if it resonated with you, because my whole thing is connection. I love making sure that people don't feel alone in this world and don't feel like they're the only ones going through any sort of struggles or successes. I think we should all be celebrating and supporting each other at the same time. It's a wonderful community of, you know, like, I don't know what this community is that has been created, but my goodness, it's beautiful. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so grateful. I can't even begin to tell you. So anyway, I hope you're having a lovely day, wherever you are, whatever you're up to, and I shall see you next time for another subject. All right. Mwah. See you later. Lots of love. Bye. It's almost done.